This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. North Carolina is home to lots of birds. We have cardinals, robins, blue jays, hawks, and pigeons. And, of course, there was a time when there were lots more birds, including the Carolina parakeet. It inhabited forests along the eastern United States, ranged north to the Great Lakes, west to Nebraska. These brightly colored birds were hunted by farmers in the 1800s at the same time as forests were, of course, destroying the habitat. So by the 1920s, the Carolina parakeet was extinct. Although they have gone from our skies, they live on in our imaginations. An exhibit at the Wilson Library at UNC Chapel Hill documents the birds. It's called The Carolina Parakeet in Art, Images from the Powell Collection. It runs through September 30th. John Gerwin is a research scientist and curator of birds at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences, and he joins us in the studio today. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
So there's this bird that goes all over the eastern U.S., goes out to Nebraska, and we call it the Carolina parakeet. How'd that happen?
That bird, when it was first being observed by the early explorers, early colonists, it just went by the name parakeet. And when you read the literature, there are about 30 different ways that they spelled it or called it paraqueto, parakeeto. But it really didn't get the name Carolina, as best I can tell, until William Bartram, one of the early explorers in the 1700s, made a painting and called it the parakeet of Carolina. That was a common name. He then sent that picture back overseas, and it was formally described by Linnaeus. It was in 1758 that became its...
He's the guy who gave everything two names.
He gave it the Latin
name. He came
up with the system for two names.
Mm-hmm.
So he gave it the scientific name, and there it got the specific name of Carolinensis.
So even in Nebraska, they have to call it the Carolina parakeet.
Yeah.
When it was flying around out there.
Right.
And so another question before we find out about the plight of this bird, parakeet and parrots, are they related? What is a parakeet?
Well, a parakeet, that little keet part just refers to a small parrot. And so they also, these early explorers would refer to it in their notes back home as parrots abound or flocks of parrots. And the next time it would be flocks of parakeets. And so it's just really, it's a small parrot.
It was a little parrot. And were these birds common at all in Europe, or was the first time they saw these things when they got to the Western Hemisphere?
This would have been the first time this bird only occurred in the southeastern U.S., although some of them had experience when they traveled to the West Indian Islands, so in the Caribbean Islands. There's reference to some who said that this bird looked like some of the parakeets they saw.
How plentiful was this bird in its
Well, it was plentiful in Florida and perhaps Louisiana. But when you read about it in some of these early writings, it becomes a little hard to actually figure out just how plentiful, because, you know, comments are being what they are and no real numbers associated. And it's been interesting to read up on it a little bit and realize that there's a lot of mystery about it. And although they describe it as being in flocks, we don't really know how common, and there's some indication that maybe it wasn't as common as we think. For example, one person traced all the information back and realized that there are really no reports from the western Piedmont or mountains of North Carolina. So although the bird is thought of as being all across the state, it apparently did not. It only occurred in the coastal plain, probably.
And did parakeets go up into the mountains in general, parrots and parakeets?
Well, in other countries, they do. So there are, for example, parakeets in South America that range all the way up to 12,000 feet.
Wow.
But this one did not.
Describe this one for us. What kind of a bird is it?
Well, it's a green. It's about a foot long, green, yellow head. Had this sort of crimson color around the bill, and of course the little parrot hooked bill. It does have a long pointed tail, so in flight, it would look like a mourning dove, about the same size, and about that size, you know, about 10 ounces or so.
What do they eat?
They eat fruits and seeds, and so they would, like other birds will do, they will track things that are available in the spring when mulberries were fruiting. There are reports that they love to eat mulberry, and later in the summer, and say elm seeds or maple seeds were out, they would eat those. They also had apparently a fondness for this thing called a cocklebur. And the interesting thing there is that the cockleburs do have a toxin in them. But apparently it didn't kill the parakeet. The parakeet was able to sequester it.
Wow.
There is a report one time of a, of some of these, an early explorer who had shot some birds and tossed the meat aside, and some feral cats ate it, and one of the cats died from it.
Wow. So. Well, but that's interesting because from an adaptive point of view, the cocklebur needs somebody to eat it and then deposit a seed later on. So it's got to not kill somebody.
Correct. And there's some indication that they ate cypress, the cypress seeds as well, and may have been an agent of dispersal for the cypress.
Cocklebur, no fun out in the plain states where if you're in monoculture, agriculture, it's the bane of your existence.
And farmers had this sort of love-hate with the parakeet because they appreciated that it ate the cocklebirs. There are reports that was appreciated, but they also came in late in the summer and descended on these stacks of corn. And so then they were shot quite mercilessly at that
And
time.
Is that why we see them no more?
I think that's part of it. There are, you know, it's a bit of conjecture because what we find is that there was a lot of things that weren't written down, a lot of things that just weren't fully documented. And there's reference to all the shooting, but it's hard to tell just how much. But it definitely occurred. There was a large contingent for the millinery or the feather trade. So in the 1800s, that was a big deal to have a feather in your cap, so to speak. That was a big deal, and that led to the formation of the National Audubon Society in the early 1900s was to protect the birds that were being shot. By the early 1900s, parakeets were pretty much gone, but people were shooting herons and egrets and things like that. But throughout the 1800s, the birds were definitely being used for the hat trade, the feather trade.
So there's some of that. Some of them are being shot as pests. At other times, we want their feathers. And then I suppose the loss of habitat as farmers moved in, right?
People don't realize that in eastern North America, pretty much every acre was cut. There are very few acres that weren't cut at least once. And many places were on third or fourth generation of trees. So we can regrow these things. But in those times, and you know, when the first settlers came, we're talking about trees that were 150, 200 feet tall with huge crowns. The habitat was very different. And there was, in the 1700s, 1800s, there was so much activity going on with building of ships and then railroads later and buildings and things that it's surprising we have anything left sometimes. it took a big hit.
Now, these birds are gone in the wild. Are they gone everywhere or just from around here? Are they gone extinct?
These are gone. Yeah. They are.
And not even as pets, so there's no variety that remains.
That's correct. There are some species. There are some other species of parrots and parakeets whose numbers are below 100, and there are more of them in captivity than there are in the wild where folks are trying to do captive breeding. That usually gives you mixed success when you try to reintroduce them to the wild.
Yeah, I guess the only real pictures we have, there wouldn't have been any photographs,
right?
So, but wildlife portraiture was pretty important around that time as well.
The parakeet figure prominently in art, so we have some artwork from the 1700s and then some from the 1800s. I mentioned the Catesby art. He actually states that's a bird that he got in South Carolina, and that's how the Carolina name was attached.
We like being fuzzy about that here. You know, we got our Carolina Panthers and all that.
Right.
It's okay with us to be a little fuzzy. So what's in the exhibit? What kinds of art do we see at the Wilson Library?
It's a collection of these different portraitures over time. Folks have, as I said, been doing it for a few hundred years, and a wonderful couple in the area had been accumulating a number of pieces, and including some more contemporary ones. We had a artist in residence at the museum for years, and he did a really nice Carolina parakeet in the style of Audubon, and that's in the exhibit as well. But that, you know, he did that maybe just 15 years ago, 10 or 15 years ago, so it's contemporary as well as some of the early.
What kind of a song do these birds have, and were they capable of mimicking?
No, they were not capable of mimicking human voice. That is referenced in some of the early literature that they were popular as cage birds. People did tame; they could be tamed down. That you could take a wild bird and get it to adapt. Mm-hmm. But folks that tried to teach it human words, they were unsuccessful. As far as the vocalizations, all we have written are the typical cackling or screeching that we all know that a small parrot will make.
And I wondered about that. I mean, I associate that human voice mimicking with a parrot. Are there parakeets that do that as well?
The closest thing that I can think of would be the cockatiel. They can apparently make some word sounds. I don't think all the parrot species have been tested. You know, there's some over 150 species. And
while they may not be able to ever be a guest on this talk show, they are social, aren't they?
They're one of the most social groups of birds for sure. The crows and jays are another social group. I think of them as the two groups that are, if you had to put the word intelligence to an animal or a bird, it's the parrot group or the crow group. If you've not read a book called The Mind of the Raven, I highly recommend it. You may not want to meet a raven after reading that book, just to read how truly intelligent those birds are.
How does that show up? What do you mean intelligent?
Well, in the case of parrots, they can learn language in context, and then they can apply it later in the appropriate context. So there's one woman in particular has worked with African gray parrots for over 20 years doing different kinds of experiments and things like that. And she has shown that they can learn words, but they learn it in context just the way we do. It's experiential learning. But then they can remember it and they can apply it later in the appropriate context. And so to me, that's a case where I would call something intelligent. You know, it's a fuzzy word when you start right. applying it to animals and how it relates to humans. But again, if there was ever a case to do it, I would say that's it.
But I mean, they know what you're talking about, in other words.
They seem to be able to take something they've learned and give it back to you.
But I mean, I guess that's the quality. If you're going to be social, you have to be able to communicate, I guess, right?
I would say that sociality is what really breeds communication, and that takes it to a whole nother level.
Right. Correct. And then unfortunately you evolve politics and then you get stupid again and you lose your intelligence. Sad thing there. But what about, there was a strange behavior that these birds had that may also have led to or at least contributed to their extinction.
Yeah. The flocking behavior and the sort of what I call the flock loyalty. If a flock member fell for whatever reason, the other members would turn back and they would come in. Now, we don't know if they're coming, you know, to aid it or what they think they can do or if it's just the inquisitiveness that parrots in general have. So when a bird was shot and fell out of a flock, the flock would turn around and come back. Well, of course, the person standing there with the gun just keeps shooting and they keep flying off from the sound, but then they would come back and just didn't take long to shoot that flock out of existence. And that's what would happen. From the reports, that's what would happen at the corn, you know, when they came into. Mm. They also had a bad habit of coming to apple orchards or peach orchards. And
that makes farmers unhappy.
Yeah. It was this duality thing. Yeah. If they would just stick to the cocklebirds, that would have been.
So they weren't just not smart enough.
Right.
Either that or the apples were great. So what now, as they become extinct in the 1820s, something must have filled the niche. How did the ecology change as these birds went extinct? Do we know?
Well, they actually were. We had the last wild birds were seen in the early 1900s. Oh. The last captive one was 1918 in the Cincinnati Zoo, which actually is also where the last passenger pigeon died, was in the Cincinnati Zoo about 1914. We don't know quite enough about its niche to really say it. It's a good question. But what is a little bit of what's happening now is there are some parrots and parakeets that have taken up residence, especially in South Florida and in a few other urban areas.
These are
not
escape
quite the
pets,
same niche.
Maybe?
Yeah, people would release them or they escape. And one interesting one that's a similar size and is also cold tolerant. That was the thing about the Carolina parakeet is that it was a cold tolerant parrot. Not all of them appear to be that way, but is one called the monk parakeet or the Quaker parrot. It's a common cage bird, pet bird. But now there are good populations in South Florida, in Chicago, in New York, San Francisco, London.
So they adapt pretty well from
they
captivity.
Do. They are found in Argentina, and so they from a latitudinal perspective, you know, they're south latitudinally. It mirrors what's in the north.
So a monk or Quaker parrot. This must be an interesting looking character.
It's just green with a gray hood.
I see. And,
yeah.
Well, what's the situation now in general with birds in North Carolina? Do we have many endangered species?
Well, you know, there are always winners and losers when you have these changes. And so for some of the changes that have taken place, the anthropogenic changes. Some birds adapt really well. And that can also be a problem when the blackbirds, for example, they change their behavior in bigger flocks, and then they are also descending on farm fields, and there are probably more blackbirds than we've ever had, and some other things like swallows. There's some that have done really well because of our roads and bridges. They nest. Barn swallows and cliff swallows have expanded nesting. So some birds are doing well, and then there are some that prefer more mature forests, for example, or one thing that's a little disheartening is grassland birds have really taken a hit. A lot of good grassland is converted for agriculture. Right. And another thing that's happened is the way that we've changed our agricultural practices. So for a while, there are a number of birds that could nest in hay fields. But now, with advances in technology and such, the hay can be cut three times, whereas it used to only be cut once. And that triple cutting, just every time the birds try to nest, they just get whacked. So each year they keep trying, but they're never very successful. So, you know, for a while we were doing okay combining this farming and some wildlife. And the other thing is that in the old days, the farms used to be small family, and all the families would leave a little bit of habitat around the edge. They leave a tree row. They leave a brush row. Nowadays, it's more corporate, and it's cleared right to the edge. And so it's just a sea of ag without – and those little hedgerows really, really were a great buffer for a lot of wildlife. And you know, so there's some changes there. We've even lost wildlife with – there's a bird that I work with colleagues at the museum in Wake Audubon, the chimney swift. It's an urban bird. It's adapted to chimneys. It used to be in hollow, dead trees, and now it's in chimneys. But chimneys now are being made differently. And the bird can no longer grip on the inside, so we're actually losing habitat by a change in building code.
John, good to talk with you.
Thank you.
John Gerwin, research scientist and curator of birds at the North Carolina Museum of Sciences. The Carolina Parakeet in Art Images from the Powell Collection runs through September 30th at the Wilson Library on the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill campus. That's the state of things for today. Thanks for listening. This is North Carolina Public Radio, the broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.